And on this Saturday morning, the 10th of August, I am joined from the University of Minnesota by Julie Weisenhorn. Julie, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Denny. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I hope you are too. It's been a good week. It's rather cool this morning.
It's feeling very fallish.
Isn't it though? Yeah. 59 is our current new temp. And this has got to be, according to you and your colleagues, pretty good weather for our lawns, right?
Yeah, this is great weather, actually, for our lawns. Our lawns are comprised, as listeners know, of cool season grasses. And those grasses start to grow again when we get temperatures like this. So we kind of are dormant during the middle of the summer. We had those really hot days of 90s. Not as many as last year, thank goodness. But the grasses kind of slow down. They kind of take a break from growing, and then they start growing again around this time. So, yeah, great, great grass growing weather.
I have to say, though, with all the rains we had this spring, and they were great, that I thought all of my dormant seeding was working out, and indeed it did. It was looking lush. It was fantastic. Great. However, over the summer, and I'm not sure, I've never dethatched a lawn, but I have got more weeds than I've ever had. Now what?
Well, I know it. And just like it's great for our, this weather's great for our grasses, it's been really great for weeds, too.
I guess.
So it's been an excellent growing season. And, you know, we kind of started out after that pretty mellow winter that we had. And, you know, we've had rain, too much rain in some places, but we've had rain. We've had good temperatures for growing. Now it's getting a little bit cooler and people are getting, a bit concerned maybe that their vegetables aren't going to ripen. Mm-hmm. But we do have, you know, really nice days coming up that are in the high 70s, low 80s. And that's really a great time for the fruits on our plants to start ripening.
Well, and as far as, and I know our friend John Trappi would say, mm-hmm. and has said when you guys were on last, that as far as weeds, lawn weeds, you might as well let them die off naturally, right? Am I correct on that this fall?
Well, it depends if they're annual weeds like crabgrass or if they're perennial like quackgrass. So, right now, John would advise just let the annuals, you know, keep mowing your lawn to mow off any seed heads that form, say, on your crabgrass. But then those plants are going to die off, too. So, you know, keep mowing your lawns. Keep it long because we don't know what the next months might hold. We might, you know, stop having rain.
Yeah, that's true.
But we want to keep our root to shoot ratio good. So 3 inches, 3.5 inches. But then keep mowing on those weeds, too, and pull the weeds, too. Keep up on pulling weeds in your gardens. Don't let those get out of control. Weeds can harbor pests. They can also compete with our plants for resources like water and space and light. So we want to keep weeding and keep doing that. We've been doing a lot of that at the Foodscape at the Arboretum. Lots and lots of weeding.
Uh-huh. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, then if you're a regular listener to the show, you know how busy we tend to get. Call us or text us. You can talk with Julie or send Julie a text, 651-461-9226. This one came in early this morning, Julie. How do I know, texter says, when it's the best time to pick my red onions? Thank you. Look forward every weekend for your show. What's the best time to pick the red onions?
I think when they're starting to emerge from the soil, they're large enough and you start to see that red color at the base of the stem of the growth on top of the top of the onions, and they're about the size that you want them to be. So I know that we've started picking at our market garden at the Arboretum, and that people have started pulling up the onions at this point. So it depends. It also depends on the kind of onions. They said red onions, but you might have, say, scallions. And then you want to just pull those when the stems are about the size that you want them to be. You can pull small scallions. You can pull a little bit bigger. You can wait till they get larger.
All right, very good. Question for Julie via text. Texter says, I had a gorgeous oxalis plant over the past month or so. Every day there would be more and more dead leaves on it, sometimes 5 or 6 a day. I have one rather sad-looking leaf left, and it appears a new leaf is sprouting. Do you have any idea what could have happened? I did not notice any bugs or anything.
So oxalis plants, which are great ornamental plants, grow from little tiny corms. They look kind of like a garbanzo bean, actually. They're maybe a pinkish in color. And it may be that some of those have rotted with all the rain that we've had. If they've been growing in a pot that hasn't drained very well, for example, they may have rotted, and that would have obviously resulted in dead leaves. But they also might just be going through a phase where those leaves are just dead, and they may start to sprout new ones as well. So look at the kind of pot that they're growing in. Make sure it has good potting media, so nice, well-drained soil, and then that the pot actually drains really well. You may want to repot them. Maybe that soil is kind of expired, and it's time to put them in some fresh soil. This is a good opportunity to take a look at those corms and see what they what they're looking at. I think they're called corms. I'm pretty sure, but I'm not positive. But maybe repot them at this point.
Okay. Texter says this, Julie. Last year, I bought a weeping pussy willow tree rated for zone 3. I live in St. Cloud. It is now about 20 inches tall, but the weeping branches are not weeping pussy willow tree rated for zone 3. I live in St. Cloud. It is now about 20 inches tall, but the weeping branches are not only touching the ground, but about 4 inches too long on the ground. With our wet weather, I wonder if the leaves and ends of the branches will begin to deteriorate. Would you trim them so they're off the ground? And what would be the healthiest for this charming little tree?
That's a great tree. I love pussy willows in general, but the weeping ones really make great accent plants in your yard. I'd head them back. In other words, I would look at those branches, and if there's a point at which you can bring it back, you can shorten it up so that it is not hanging on the ground. If they do hang on the ground, they're going to actually root, and you're going to have more pussy willows growing around the base. And they won't be weeping pussy willows. They'll just be regular pussy willows. So you want to prevent that from happening, or maybe not. It's up to you. But go ahead and head those back. In other words, cut them back to a point where a branch, maybe another stem branches off of that main stem or off of that main branch. In other words, kind of like an intersection on that particular stem that you're trimming back.
Okay. Before we break, let's grab a phone call. Jim calling in from Webster, I believe, this morning. Hi, Jim. What's your question for Julie?
I have a question about some creepy Charlie. I moved a white pine tree from a neighbor's house to my yard, and, of course, I got some creeping Charlie with it. But I want to do the, like, thermal killing of it, the creeping Charlie. But the creeping Charlie's underneath the pine tree. If I leave plastic, I was going to do black plastic, will that harm the tree if I leave that on there for extended?
Yeah, good question. So you're talking about kind of a general term is solarization, and this is the use of solarization is use of clear plastic and utilizing the solar power of the sun to essentially raise the temperature underneath that plastic and kill everything under that plastic. So using black plastic, I can't think of the term. My friend Laura, my colleague, would know it. But it's using heat then and not using solar so much, but to kill what's underneath there. The creeping Charlie is under the plant, under the white pine, and I would not use solarization in that effect because that will actually kill or harm the roots of the white pine. Very possible. So I think this is going to be a case where you're going to have to keep weeding it out of the base of the pine. The other thing too is that you need to have full sun to really maximize that solarization power or that heat from the sunlight. And with it growing under a tree, it's not going to get that. So that's probably not going to be very effective. So I would go ahead and keep pulling it, just keep working on it. Hopefully you didn't get too much with your plant. The other thing you could try to do is very, very carefully separate the leaves of the creeping Charlie and just take either a sponge paintbrush, or you can buy glyphosate that is in a tube, like a deodorant tube, and you can dab it on the leaves of just the creeping Charlie. Don't spray with a drench or anything. Don't use a spray on it because you may harm the white pine, but you can just touch those leaves of the creeping Charlie. This is a good time to manage weeds in that respect because they're busy translocating or putting all their energy into creating really, really great roots to get them through the winter. So you could do it a couple. It depends how much creeping Charlie you have. So I try picking it away myself and just kind of keep working on it.
Okay. Let us take a quick break, Julie. If you have a question, a lawn or garden type of question for Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M, call us or text us, 651-461-9226. Right now in the Twin Cities, 59 degrees. We're heading for near 72, 78 tomorrow. Stay with us. News Talk 830. This is WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, answering any kind of a lawn or garden question you have this morning. Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. Julie, I noticed, and I have to say, I feel the same way about what little crop I have here. Some folks are saying, what's the deal with certain vegetables that we're trying to grow, tomatoes and such? They don't seem to be producing like they should, and some of them look kind of weird.
Yeah, so we have an excellent article called Heat Wave Makes Vegetables Misbehave by our own Marissa Hsu, who's one of our educators. And she wrote a really good article here, and it explains a lot of the weird things you might be seeing with vegetables. For example, your plant might look really great, super lush, lots of leaves, but not a lot of fruit. And that could be that it maybe you've been maybe over-fertilizing it with too much nitrogen. That nitrogen produces a lot of foliage. Another issue can be really hot day and nighttime temperatures can cause flowers on these plants to drop off. So that's one of the issues too. We've had some really warm temperatures recently, and that might be what you're seeing too. Also, a plant can, hot temperatures can change what kind of flowers that vegetables produce. So for example, vining vegetables in our squash family, this is our pumpkins, squash, melons, cukes, and the like, they produce both male and female flowers, and that temperature can cause a plant to produce more male flowers, which carry the pollen, than the female flowers, which ultimately get fertilized and produce the fruit. So that can be a change that you see. If you're not seeing a lot of squash, but you see tons of flowers, you could be looking at a lot of male flowers. And a lot of bees don't like really high temperatures. So the ideal range for pollination is between 60 to 90 degrees. If we've got those 95, 100 degree weather, those bees slow down. They're just like us. They want to just take a break in the heat. So that may be the case now. So, and in some cases you might have a lot of vegetables, but they're just not getting ripe. Sometimes poor pollination can result in fruits that can't grow, or hot nights mean that fruit just doesn't ripen. So again, we've been through this stage. And sometimes we just need to be patient. You know, humans are very impatient when it comes to their vegetables, particularly this time of year. And just be patient with it. There's other great information in this article, a lot of great details. You can get super nerdy about this, but it's really good information and might help to answer your questions about why your vegetables look strange, or that they're due to poor pollination, or that they're just not ripening.
It's such a great resource. Maybe let's mention that for those listeners who may have joined us a little bit late. And we always talk about it for good reason. extension.umn.edu.
Right.
Just there's a wealth of information, pardon the expression, but it really is. Tons of information. If you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn is answering those questions this morning, either by phone or by text. Any kind of a lawn or garden question you may have, 651-461-9226. Julie Texter says, this summer I planted 3 butterfly weed plants. 2 of them have orange flowers on them. Should I cut the flowers off to give the plant more energy to keep growing healthy roots and all, or doesn't it matter?
I would let those flowers just turn into pods. So they'll produce milkweed-type pods. They're in the milkweed family. And those pods will burst open when the seeds are ripe, and you will have more of these Asclepias tuberosa or butterfly weed plants in your garden. So if that is one of your goals, I know it's one of mine. I let my pods just stay on, let them open naturally, and let those seeds just fly around. So these are they're beautiful plants. They're very important to our monarchs. and provide a lot of great joy in the garden as well. The color is just a true orange color, which is really beautiful.
Boy, here's a quandary. Texter says, I have a very soggy backyard, but the lawn needs mowing. What should I do now?
Yeah, that's going to be tricky because you don't want to compact that soggy soil. You may want to mow as much as you can. So go around that soggy area. Hopefully it's not too big, too much of your lawn in the backyard. And then let the rest be until it dries out. I think we're looking like we only have about a 50% chance of rain, I think, on Wednesday right now. So this could be, you might be able to let it dry out. And as soon as you can gently walk on it without, you know, sinking into the soil, when it firms up, then you could go ahead and mow it.
Wow.
Yeah. You might have to weed whip it down first a little bit to just so that your lawnmower can actually function correctly.
Yeah, that's a good point. I know we'll break for weather here in a moment. Let's grab another text, Julie. As a result of the heavy rain on Monday, texter says three lower branches on my beautiful limelight hydrangea tree snapped off.
Oh, yes.
There's very little of the trunk left where the branches snapped. What should I do to help the tree survive?
The tree should naturally heal itself. So sometimes we try to help our plants and we make it worse. So I would let it just be. I had the same problem. We had a lot of wind too, and the wind snapped off probably 90% of my Joe Pieweed, which were just coming into bloom. They're beautiful, but I've seen a lot of broken branches and, you know, a lot of broken plants as well. But just trim off, use a nice clean sharp pruner and just trim off those branches if you haven't done that already, and then just leave the plant. Hopefully it will just callus over those areas where those branches came off.
All right. Julie, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We have about another half hour of the show to go right after that forecast here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Hi, good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Julie Weisenhorn from the UM answering those lawn and garden questions. And regular listeners of the show, Julie, know that you also play in a group called the Abiders.
Yes.
And you're going to be working out, today, this week?
Yeah, we've got a couple of gigs this weekend I'd like to invite people to. One of them is, actually, it's a fundraiser about water quality and clean water around Lake Minnetonka. It's called Carp Fest, and it is a fundraiser to raise money for the Harrison's Bay Association, which is a citizen group out here. And Harrison's Bay Association has been working with the University of Minnesota and other not carp-friendly groups to help to manage the carp population in our lake and to raise awareness of that for people. So we're playing at that. It's from 2 to 7 today. It is on Sherwood Drive. You can visit harrisonsbay.org to find out more. And we'll be at the Arboretum tomorrow for Music in the Garden. We like to do that to support the Arboretum with our musical talents. So much stuff happening at the Arboretum while I'm on that.
Yeah.
We play from 1:30 to 3 tomorrow, but there's also great stuff to do today. For example, we have Sunflower Day out at the farm at the Arb from 10 to 2. This is a great drop-in kind of activity, family-friendly, tons of great fun. I was out there last week when we had Honey Day, and I know that coming up we have also Sugar Beet Day, where people actually will be pulling sugar beets of their own. Art in the Garden is coming up as well. That is the weekend of August 16th through the 18th. 70 local vendors from culinary to crafts to fine arts will be displaying their beautiful, beautiful artwork. And it's a great event. So that information is on the homepage at arb.umn.edu. And just a heads up that Highway 5 will be closed from Rolling Acre Road, which is County Road 13, to the Arboretum's main, past the Arboretum's main entrance. So there'll be a detour for anybody coming from the west on Highway 5.
Coming from the west, okay.
Coming from the west.
Yeah. I tell you,
just for a week. till the 18th.
Such a fun time at the Arboretum. I remember my daughter Tina and I were there. She's got these great folding lawn chairs that she brought with that made it so comfortable. But that's a lot of fun. So I urge folks to check out the abiders when they get a chance. Now, you know what? Somebody was questioning, what's the deal? Do I have to make reservations to get to the Arboretum just to visit there? What's the deal with that?
Yeah, so go visit arb.umn.edu and go to plan your visit and get tickets. And if you are members, there's no cost to the tickets. If you're not a member, you may as well become one and be able to just come and go as you please. But get tickets, especially for any of the special events like the Art in the Garden, for example. That one sells out quite fast for that time period. So go ahead and visit arb.umn.edu. And you can go ahead and book tickets now. There's a bar right underneath the big picture of the bee in the pink flower. And be sure to get tickets for the time and date that you want to come out there.
Excellent. All right, back to the show. Let's grab a phone call. I think Grace may still be there calling in from Hugo this morning. Thanks for waiting, Grace. What is your question for Julie?
Yes. I've been a gardener for 20 years anyway. I discovered I have leaf mold on my tomato plants. Never, ever, ever have I had that disease. I had sprayed with fungicide 3 times and then, sprayed once shortly after the rain came, so I sprayed again. How long does it take for that spray to really be effective? And number one, and then number two is I do have old fungicide that have freeze and thawed. Could that be an issue? I don't know. The product could be, maybe 10 years old. I don't know.
Okay. So the issue with fungal spores is that once you see the damage, it's too late to really spray anything. So that spray is pretty ineffective. Being 10 years old may be also another case too. I would say that you should safely dispose of that. You can bring it to a hazardous waste location. I know the one that I go to. I live in Hennepin County. It's up by Brooklyn Park. And you can bring any old pesticides up there and they'll dispose of them safely. You don't want to put them in the garbage. Don't want to pour them down the drain or anything like that. You want to bring them to a location that supports and takes care of those hazardous wastes for you. But yeah, once you start to see fungal spores, your spots, etc., it's too late to do anything on your tomatoes. What you might want to consider next year is you can mulch the base of the tomatoes, which helps to lessen the chance of splashing spores from soil. But you should also rotate your tomatoes. So if you've been planting them in the same area repeatedly, maybe that's not the case. You sound like a pretty experienced gardener. Then you want to move them somewhere else. Or move if you've been growing them in containers, you want to really wash those containers with bleach and water. Clean them up really well before you put them away, and then remove the soil and compost the soil and put in fresh soil next year. Also, be sure to clean any cages, stakes, ties, anything that you reuse with tomatoes, because those spores from those fungal diseases can also reside on those materials as well. So, and the last thing I'd alert you to is that as you move from plant to plant, if you're wearing gardening gloves, if you're using pruners, if you're using a trowel or any kind of tool, you may be carrying those fungal spores from plant to plant as well. So just be really conscientious of sanitation when you're working with tomatoes. And you can also try some new tomatoes that maybe are resistant to some of these things, these diseases that you've seen, too. So think about that when you're choosing your tomatoes next year.
All right. Before we get back to texts, let's grab another phone call. Sharon calling in from North Branch this morning. Hi, Sharon. What is your question, please?
Good morning. I have a Weigelia that's only 2 years old and is getting really bushy already. Can I trim it back now, or do I have to wait till later fall?
You want to trim those back after they bloom. So I believe they're a summer blooming shrub, if I remember correctly. And so when they're finished blooming, then you can go ahead and trim them. You can also wait and trim them in the winter as well, too. But yeah, you want to enjoy the any kind of flowering that they have, and then prune them after that.
All right, very good. Is this a good weekend to trim back iris and divide hostas, Texter wants to know.
It is a good week to do your iris, also your peonies too. If you've got a lot of peonies that are crammed together, this is a good time to divide them and to move them. Now, with peonies and with iris, be sure that you're planting them at the right depth. So iris rhizomes, those are those kind of, they look kind of like ginger, which is also a rhizome. You want to plant those so that those are slightly showing, those rhizomes show at the top of the soil. So plant them about half deep. And then you can also trim those back. Now remember, any of the green leafy growth that you trim back, you're removing some of the potential for photosynthetic activity. In other words, what the plant does to create energy for next year. So unless they're dead, I wouldn't trim off the leaves. Unless they're brown or yellow or maybe they've, you know, failed, you could trim those off, but keep any of the nice green leaves. Just let those be. And yeah, this is a good time to do the iris. Also peonies. Peonies are really fussy about the depth they get planted, so plant them at the same depth. And they may take a few years before those transplanted peonies bloom again. So just be aware of that. But it's a good time, especially if you've had a lot of powdery mildew issues or other leaf diseases, is to spread those peonies out.
Okay. Listener wants to know, when should we stop fertilizing our lawns? Good question.
Oh, that's a good question. I wish John was on. I think
this is really the time of year, isn't it? Like August, September?
Yeah.
To do that?
Yep, you could go ahead and fertilize now. Again, they're actively growing. Yes, Denny, you're correct. You can answer this question. But so lawns are actively growing. And when plants are actively growing, that's a good time to fertilize them, in this case, the lawn. And so you could go ahead and do that now. And John recommends just going with like a fertilizer. Don't go with a weed and feed combination because you may be putting down more product than you really need. And so go ahead and do that now. And then this is also a great time if you're going to do any core aeration to relieve compaction of your lawn and also to seed your lawn. So we have a kind of a nice window in Minnesota of, you know, mid-August to I think around early October where you could seed for next year. You can also wait and seed like you did, Denny, in November. Yeah. When the ground freezes, and you can do dormant seeding in anticipation for a lush lawn next year, too.
That's a good thing that what you and John recommended a couple of shows ago about don't use weed and feed, especially if you're going to be seeding, right?
Oh, especially if you're going to be seeding. And our plants, remember that we grow cool season grasses, and we want to fertilize when those plants are actively growing, not in the middle of summer when it's hot and they go dormant. So this is a good time. They're starting to rev back up for the fall growing season.
Julie, before we take a quick break, let's do one more text. Here's a quandary. Texter says, when should I mow a newly seeded lawn? It was planted 4.5 weeks ago, a mix of annual grass, perennial grass, and clover. In some areas, the grass is 4 inches tall, some areas 6 to 8 tall, some areas the blades are already 12 or more inches tall. Can I or should I mow at least part of it? This is about 1/2 acre.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, you might have to weed whip down some of that taller grass. So you might have to take a nice sharp blade. If you have a weed whipper with a nice blade, that would be great. But if you have a string trimmer, you might need to do that first, because I don't know if you'll be able to get your lawnmower through there. That's a lush lawn, so nice job.
You could bag it, couldn't you? Only
you could bag it.
Empty the lot.
That'd probably be a good idea, is to bag it if you can.
That's what
otherwise, you should rake it up, because it's going to lay on your new grass and probably shade it out too much. So,
good point.
Yeah, it's going to be a phase type of project, I think. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's been a great year.
Good point.
Yeah, it's going to be a phase type of project, I think. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's been a great year for growing grass.
Well, I should say. All right, hang on, Julie. We'll take this bit of a break here. Be right back with the remainder of the show. Here is our phone number. It also happens to be the text number, 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830 WCCO. And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming any kind of a lawn or garden question you might have for Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. And we have, of course, Julie, more than we'll get to this Saturday morning. Let's grab a phone call. I think Janine is on the horn calling in from Mapleton this morning. Janine, good morning. What's your question, please?
Good morning. I am a home gardener, and I plant potatoes every year. And for the past 5 to 10 years, I get what I'm assuming is a blight in the potato patch. And about 30 days after the potatoes emerge from the soil, the leaves get a tinge of purple to them, and then they curl up, and eventually the whole plant dies. So the size of the potato never advances to beyond like a new potato size. I have tried different varieties of potatoes. I rotate every year. I'm wondering if, one, if it really is a blight, and two, if there's an additive that I can add to the soil that will help get rid of whatever is going on.
Wow. That is a good question. I'm just looking, actually, we have a great page called Vegetables A to Z, and it lists a whole bunch of different vegetables in here. I'm just looking at the potatoes page now under diseases, and I will totally be transparent, and I am not a potato expert. But there are a number of different diseases. There's early blight, late blight, which you mentioned. Those are fungal diseases, and they cause leaf spot diseases and lesions on the potato tubers. So I don't know about the discolorization that you're talking about with the purple color and then the plant completely failure. But they do mention that soil-borne diseases of the potato can cause an entire crop failure. And once those spores are in the garden, it's difficult to get rid of. So it could be that, where do you get your seed potatoes? Janine, are you still on the line there?
Yep, I'm still here. And I do buy them from local nurseries. So they're coming from reputable sources.
Okay.
And the potatoes themselves do not have blemishes on them. It's just that the plant dies, therefore it stunts the size of the tuber.
It sounds to me, and you're rotating them, which is great, but I'm wondering if that that those leaves are causing, you know, that there's a fungal disease, like a early or late blight. And I don't know if there's something that you can spray, or that maybe the sweet potatoes need to be, let's see, boy, this is a headbanger for me. I think that it sounds to me like it's soil borne, and that there may be, you may have to change your growing location more than just rotating them in a, I don't know if you rotate them in a single bed, or if they're from bed to bed, but you maybe, if you're a home gardener, maybe you want to try growing them in a container or in a straw bale garden, or just something completely different that that you can still get better potatoes than you're getting now. So it's clearly, to me, it sounds like it's a fungal disease that's killing the upper part of the plant, and that's a soil-borne disease of the potato. So yeah, I think that I think I'd try like something completely different, and maybe growing them in containers with fresh soil.
All right,
that's a great question.
Well, we've got 2-3 minutes to go on the show, Julie. Let's see how many folks we can help out here. Here's another text. Texter says, "I planted 5 Carl Forrester feather grass. The leaves are full and healthy, but I got no feather seed heads. What's wrong, do you think?"
I'm going to say sunlight. That maybe they are planted somewhat in the shade, and these are full sun plants, and you're going to get the best flowering from these plants. That's actually what they are, the flowers. You're going to get that in full sun. So I'm thinking that maybe it's time to move those plants. They may also be older plants. Not sure how old they are, but you can look in the center of a Carl Forrester feather reed grass, and you start to see a bare center. That indicates that the older part of the plant has died off, and you just have the newer growth, which is the outer part of the plant. It looks kind of like a donut almost. You can dig those plants up and then just divide them and then replant them in a sunnier location. So I'm thinking it has to do with sun.
Okay. This listener says, "My Meyer lemon tree started to bloom, and then the flowers fell off before the lemon formed.
That I've had that happen too with my Meyer lemon trees, which are a continuing saga. But it's just that they didn't get pollinated. So if they don't get pollinated, they don't form fruit, and the flowers dry up and fall off. So it's just that there's not enough bees around to do the pollination, and they are self-fertile, so they don't really need the bees. But that will enhance the possibility of fruit. Could also be, too, that there's too many flowers. They sometimes put out a ton of flowers, and the plant just can't support that many, and particularly that much fruit. So that could be another case, too, where there's just too many flowers. Maybe it's like the heat that we talked about earlier with vegetables, that heat has caused them to kind of dry up and drop off as well. So it could be a number of different things.
Okay. Texter says this, when do I stop harvesting rhubarb?
Oh, that should have stopped around the 4th of July. So we want to give our rhubarb a hefty couple of months to produce. And so you should have stopped around that time. That's kind of a rule of thumb. It can vary a little bit either way. But if you really got to bake that rhubarb pie, you might sneak out there and grab some of the stalks. But yeah, you should leave it alone. Around mid-July or so, and let it just continue to grow and fertilize it. It's a big feeder, and that'll give it a lot of energy for next year.
Ooh, rhubarb pie.
Rhubarb.
Say, we have to take our leave here, Julie, just to give a quick reminder in the last 30 seconds or so to get to the Arboretum and to get to the university website.
That's right, extension.umn.edu. And if you did not get your question answered, we have Ask a Master Gardener, where you can go ahead and send photos and ask your questions to our amazing, amazing Extension volunteers.
And if you're going to want to have a chance in beautiful weather tomorrow to hear the abiders at the Arboretum,
yeah.
When and where exactly will you be on the grounds?
We are going to be on the Newton Terrace. It is the terrace that is outside of the restaurant. So super convenient, great seating, shaded, easy to get to. And you can go inside and get yourself something to eat or something to drink, use the restrooms, go to the gift shop. But come on
excellent.
Out to us. It's a lot of
fun. And have a lot of fun, too. It's a great,
yeah.
it's just a lot of fun. Well, break a leg. And Julie, I hope to see you tomorrow. Otherwise, let's meet in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'll see you at the State Fair.
Good deal. That's right. Absolutely. Thanks, Julie Weisenhardt from the U of M. Now, got those home improvement questions ready for Andy Lindis. That's coming along next hour. 59 degrees right now from News Talk 830. This is WCCO. And on this Saturday morning, the 10th of August, I am joined from the University of Minnesota by Julie Weisenhorn. Julie, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Denny. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I hope you are, too. It's been a good week. It's rather cool this morning.
It's feeling very fallish.
Isn't it, though? Yeah. 59 is our current new temp. And this has got to be, according to you and your colleagues, pretty good weather for our lawns, right?
Yeah, this is great weather, actually, for our lawns. Our lawns are comprised, as listeners know, of cool season grasses. And those grasses start to grow again when we get temperatures like this. So we kind of are dormant during the middle of the summer. We had those really hot days of 90s. Not as many as last year, thank goodness. But the grasses kind of slow down. They kind of take a break from growing, and then they start growing again around this time. So, yeah, great, great grass-growing weather.
I have to say, though, with all the rains we had this spring, and they were great, that I thought all of my dormant seeding was working out, and indeed it did. It was looking lush. It was fantastic.
Great.
However, over the summer, and I'm not sure, I've never dethatched a lawn, but I have got more weeds than I've ever had. Now what?
I know it. And just like it's great for this weather's great for our grasses, it's been really great for weeds,
I guess.
So it's been an excellent growing season. And, you know, we kind of started out after that pretty mellow winter that we had. And, you know, we've had rain, too much rain in some places. but we've had rain. We've had good temperatures for growing. Now it's getting a little bit cooler, and people are getting, a bit concerned maybe that their vegetables aren't going to ripen. Mm-hmm. But we do have, you know, really nice days coming up that are in the high 70s, low 80s. And that's really a great time for the fruits on our plants to start ripening.
Well, and as far as, and I know our friend John Trappi would say, mm-hmm. and has said when you guys were on last, that as far as weeds, lawn weeds, you might as well let them die off naturally, right? Am I correct on that this fall?
Well, it depends if they're annual weeds like crabgrass or if they're perennial like quackgrass. So, right now, John would advise just let the annuals, you know, keep mowing your lawn to mow off any seed heads that form, say, on your crabgrass. But then those plants are going to die off, too. So, keep mowing your lawns. Keep it long because we don't know what the next months might hold. We might, you know, stop having rain.
Yeah, it's true.
But we want to keep our root-to-shoot ratio good, so 3 inches, 3.5 inches. But then keep mowing on those weeds, too, and pull the weeds, too. Keep up on pulling weeds in your gardens. Don't let those get out of control. Weeds can harbor pests. They can also compete with our plants for resources like water and space and light. So we want to keep weeding and keep doing that. We've been doing a lot of that at the Foodscape at the Arboretum. Lots and lots of weeding.
Uh-huh. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, then if you're a regular listener to the show, you know how busy we tend to get. Call us or text us. You can talk with Julie or send Julie a text, 651-461-9226. This one came in early this morning, Julie. How do I know, texter says, when it's the best time to pick my red onions? Thank you. I look forward every weekend for your show. What's the best time to pick the red onions?
I think when they're starting to emerge from the soil, they're large enough and you start to see that red color at the base of the stem of the growth on top of the onions, and they're about the size that you want them to be. So I know that we've started picking at our market garden at the Arboretum, and that people have started pulling up the onions at this point. So it depends. It also depends on the kind of onions. They said red onions, but you might have, say, scallions. And then you want to just pull those when the stems are about the size that you want them to be. You can pull small scallions. You can pull a little bit bigger. You can wait till they get larger.
All right, very good. Question for Julie via text. Texter says, I had a gorgeous oxalis plant over the past month or so. Every day there would be more and more dead leaves on it, sometimes 5 or 6 a day. I have one rather sad-looking leaf left, and it appears a new leaf is sprouting. Do you have any idea what could have happened? I did not notice any bugs or anything.
So oxalis plants, which are great ornamental plants, grow from little tiny corms. They look kind of like a garbanzo bean, actually. They're maybe a pinkish in color. And it may be that some of those have rotted. With all the rain that we've had, if they've been growing in a pot that hasn't drained very well, for example, they may have rotted, and that would have obviously resulted in dead leaves. But they also might just be going through a phase where those leaves are just dead, and they may start to sprout new ones as well. So look at the kind of pot that they're growing in. Make sure it has good potting media, so nice, well-drained soil, and then that the pot actually drains really well. You may want to repot them. Maybe that soil is kind of expired and it's time to put them in some fresh soil. This is a good opportunity to take a look at those corms and see what they what they're looking at. I think they're called corms. I'm pretty sure, but I'm not positive. But maybe repot them at this point.
Okay. Texter says this, Julie. Last year, I bought a weeping pussy willow tree rated for zone 3. I live in St. Cloud. It is now about 20 inches tall, but the weeping branches are not being pussy willow tree rated for zone 3. I live in St. Cloud. It is now about 20 inches tall, but the weeping branches are not only touching the ground, but about 4 inches too long on the ground. With our wet weather, I wonder if the leaves and ends of the branches will begin to deteriorate. Would you trim them so they're off the ground? And what would be the healthiest for this charming little tree.
That's a great tree. I love pussy willows in general, but the weeping ones really make great accent plants in your yard. I'd head them back. In other words, I would look at those branches, and if there's a point at which you can bring it back, you can shorten it up so that it is not hanging on the ground. If they do hang on the ground, they're going to actually root, and you're going to have more pussy willows growing around the base. And they won't be weeping pussy willows. They'll just be regular pussy willows. So you want to prevent that from happening, or maybe not. It's up to you. But go ahead and head those back. In other words, cut them back to a point where a branch maybe another stem branches off of that main stem or off of that main branch. In other words, kind of like an intersection on that particular stem that you're trimming back.
Okay. Before we break, let's grab a phone call. Jim calling in from Webster, I believe, this morning. Hi, Jim. What's your question for Julie?
I have a question about some creepy Charlie. I moved a white pine tree from a neighbor's house to my yard. And, of course, I got some creeping Charlie with it. But I want to do the, like, thermal killing of it, okay. The creeping Charlie. But the creeping Charlie's underneath the pine tree. If I leave plastic, I was going to do black plastic, will that harm the tree if I leave that on there for extended?
Yeah, good question. So you're talking about kind of a general term is solarization, and this is the use of solarization is use of clear plastic and utilizing the solar power of the sun to essentially raise the temperature underneath that plastic and kill everything under that plastic. So using black plastic, I can't think of the term. My friend Laura, my colleague, would know it, but it's using heat then and not using solar so much, but to kill what's underneath there. The creeping Charlie is under the plant, under the white pine, and I would not use solarization in that effect because that will actually kill or harm the roots of the white pine. Very possible. So I think this is going to be a case where you're going to have to keep weeding it out of the base of the pine. The other thing too is that you need to have full sun to really maximize that solarization power or that heat from the sunlight. And with it growing under a tree, it's not going to get that. So that's probably not going to be very effective. So I would go ahead and keep pulling it, just keep working on it. Hopefully you didn't get too much with your plant. The other thing you could try to do is very, very carefully separate the leaves of the creeping Charlie and just take either a sponge paintbrush or you can buy glyphosate that is in a tube, like a deodorant tube, and you can dab it on the leaves of just the creeping Charlie. Don't spray with a drench or anything. Don't use a spray on it because you may harm the white pine, but you can just touch those leaves of the creeping Charlie. This is a good time to manage weeds in that respect because they're busy translocating or putting all their energy into creating really, really great roots to get them through the winter. So you could do it a couple. It depends how much creeping Charlie you have. So I'd try picking it away myself and just kind of keep working on it.
Okay. Let us take a quick break, Julie. If you have a question, a lawn or garden type of question for Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M, call us or text us, 651-461-9226. Right now in the Twin Cities, 59 degrees. We're heading for near 72, 78 tomorrow. Stay with us. News Talk 830. This is WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, answering any kind of a lawn or garden question you have this morning. Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. Julie, I noticed, and I have to say, I feel the same way about what little crop I have here. Some folks are saying, what's the deal with certain vegetables that we're trying to grow, tomatoes and such? They don't seem to be producing like they should, and some of them look kind of weird.
Yeah, so we have an excellent article called Heat Wave Makes Vegetables Misbehave by our own Marissa Hsu, who's one of our educators. And she wrote a really good article here, and it explains a lot of the weird things you might be seeing with vegetables. For example, your plant might look really great, super lush, lots of leaves, but not a lot of fruit. And that could be that it maybe you've been maybe over-fertilizing it with too much nitrogen. That nitrogen produces a lot of foliage. Another issue can be really hot day and nighttime temperatures can cause flowers on these plants to drop off. So that's one of the issues, too. We've had some really warm temperatures recently, and that might be what you're seeing, too. Also, a plant can, hot temperatures can change what kind of flowers that vegetables produce. So, for example, vining vegetables in our squash family, this is our pumpkins, squash, melons, cukes, and the like, they produce both male and female flowers. And that temperature can cause a plant to produce more male flowers, which carry the pollen, than the female flowers, which ultimately get fertilized and produce the fruit. So that can be a change that you see. If you're not seeing a lot of squash, but you see tons of flowers, you could be looking at a lot of male flowers. And a lot of bees don't like really high temperatures. So the ideal range for pollination is between 60 to 90 degrees. If we've got those 95, 100 degree weather, those bees slow down. They're just like us. They want to just take a break in the heat. So that may be the case now. So, and in some cases, you might have a lot of vegetables, but they're just not getting ripe. Sometimes poor pollination can result in fruits that can't grow, or hot nights mean that fruit just doesn't ripen. So again, we've been through this stage. And sometimes we just need to be patient. You know, humans are very impatient when it comes to their vegetables, particularly this time of year. And just be patient with it. There's other great information in this article, a lot of great details. You can get super nerdy about this, but it's really good information and might help to answer your questions about why your vegetables look strange, or that they're due to poor pollination, or that they're just not ripening.
It's such a great resource. Maybe let's mention that for those listeners who may have joined us a little bit late. And we always talk about it for good reason. extension.umn.edu.
Right.
Just some there's a wealth of information, pardon the expression, but it really is. Tons of information. If you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn is answering those questions this morning, either by phone or by text. Any kind of a lawn or a garden question you may have, 651-461-9226. Julie Texter says, this summer I planted three butterfly weed plants. Two of them have orange flowers on them. Should I cut the flowers off to give the plant more energy to keep growing healthy roots and all, or doesn't it matter?
I would let those flowers just turn into pods. So they'll produce milkweed-type pods. They're in the milkweed family. And those pods will burst open when the seeds are ripe, and you will have more of these Asclepias tuberosa or butterfly weed plants in your garden. So if that is one of your goals, I know it's one of mine. I let my pods just stay on, let them open naturally, and let those seeds just fly around. So these are they're beautiful plants. They're very important to our monarchs, and provide a lot of great joy in the garden as well. The color is just a true orange color, which is really beautiful.
Boy, here's a quandary. Texter says, I have a very soggy backyard, but the lawn needs mowing. What should I do now?
Yeah, that's going to be tricky because you don't want to compact that soggy soil. You may want to mow as much as you can. So go around that soggy area. Hopefully it's not too big, too much of your lawn in the backyard. And then let the rest be until it dries out. I think we're looking like we only have about a 50% chance of rain, I think, on Wednesday right now. So this could be, you might be able to let it dry out. And as soon as you can gently walk on it without, you know, sinking into the soil, when it firms up, then you could go ahead and mow it.
Wow.
Yeah, you might have to weed whip it down first a little bit to just so that your lawnmower can actually function correctly.
Yeah, that's a good point. I know we'll break for weather here in a moment. Let's grab another text, Julie. As a result of the heavy rain on Monday, texter says three lower branches on my beautiful limelight hydrangea tree snapped off.
Oh, yes.
There's very little of the trunk left where the branches snapped. What should I do to help the tree survive?
The tree should naturally heal itself. So sometimes we try to help our plants and we make it worse. So I would let it just be. I had the same problem. We had a lot of wind too, and the wind snapped off probably 90% of my Joe Pieweed, which were just coming into bloom. They're beautiful, but I've seen a lot of broken branches and, you know, a lot of broken plants as well. But just trim off, use a nice clean sharp pruner and just trim off those branches if you haven't done that already, and then just leave the plant. Hopefully it will just callus over those areas where those branches came off.
All right. Julie, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We have about another half hour of the show to go right after that forecast here on Newstalk 830 WCCO. Hi, good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Julie Weisenhorn from the UM answering those lawn and garden questions. And regular listeners of the show, Julie, know that you also play in a group called the Abiders.
Yes.
And you're going to be working out, today, this week?
Yeah, we've got a couple of gigs this weekend I'd like to invite people to. One of them is, actually, it's a fundraiser about water quality and clean water around Lake Minnetonka. It's called Carp Fest, and it is a fundraiser to raise money to for the Harrison's Bay Association, which is a citizen group out here. And Harrison's Bay Association has been working with the University of Minnesota and other not carp-friendly groups to help to manage the carp population in our lake and to raise awareness of that for people. So we're playing at that. It's from 2 to 7 today. It is on Sherwood Drive. You can visit harrisonsbay.org to find out more. And we'll be at the Arboretum tomorrow for Music in the Garden. We like to do that to support the Arboretum with our musical talents. So much stuff happening at the Arboretum while I'm on that.
Yeah.
We play from 1:30 to 3 tomorrow, but there's also great stuff to do today. For example, we have Sunflower Day out at the farm at the Arb from 10 to 2. This is a great drop-in kind of activity, family-friendly, tons of great fun. I was out there last week when we had Honey Day, and I know that coming up we have also Sugar Beet Day, where people actually will be pulling sugar beets of their own. Art in the Garden is coming up as well. That is the weekend of August 16th through the 18th. 70 local vendors from culinary to crafts to fine arts will be displaying their beautiful, beautiful artwork. And it's a great event. So that information is on the homepage at arb.umn.edu. And just a heads up that Highway 5 will be closed from Rolling Acre Road, which is County Road 13, to the Arboretum's main, past the Arboretum's main entrance. So there'll be a detour for anybody coming from the west on Highway 5.
Coming from the west, okay.
Coming from the west.
Yeah. I tell you,
just
that's
for a week, just for a week till the 18th.
Such a fun time at the Arboretum. I remember my daughter Tina and I were there. She's got these great folding lawn chairs that she brought with that made it so comfortable. But that's a lot of fun. So I urge folks to check out the Abiders when they get a chance. Now,
it's
you know what?
Event.
Somebody was questioning, what's the deal? Do I have to make reservations to get to the Arboretum just to visit there? What's the deal with that?
Yeah, so go visit arb.umn.edu and go to plan your visit and get tickets. And if you are members, there's no cost to the tickets. If you're not a member, you may as well become one and be able to just come and go as you please. But get tickets, especially for any of the special events like the Art in the Garden, for example. That one sells out quite fast for that time period. So go ahead and visit arb.umn.edu. And you can go ahead and book tickets now. There's a bar right underneath the big picture of the bee in the pink flower. And be sure to get tickets for the time and date that you want to come out there.
Excellent. All right, back to the show. Let's grab a phone call. I think Grace may still be there calling in from Hugo this morning. Thanks for waiting, Grace. What is your question for Julie?
I've been a gardener for 20 years anyway. I discovered I have leaf mold on my tomato plants. Never, ever, ever have I had that disease. anyway, I've been sprayed. I had sprayed with fungicide 3 times, and then, you know, sprayed once shortly after the rain came, so I sprayed again. How long does it take for that spray to really be effective? And number one, and then number two is I do have old fungicide that have freeze and thawed. Could that be an issue? I don't know. The product could be, gosh, maybe 10 years old. I don't know.
Okay. So the issue with fungal spores is that once you see the damage, it's too late to really spray anything. So that spray is pretty ineffective. Being 10 years old may be also another case too. I would say that you should safely dispose of that. You can bring it to a hazardous waste location. I know the one that I go to. I live in Hennepin County. It's up by Brooklyn Park. And you can bring any old pesticides up there, and they'll dispose of them safely. You don't want to put them in the garbage. You don't want to pour them down the drain or anything like that. You want to bring them to a location that supports and takes care of those hazardous wastes for you. But yeah, once you start to see fungal spores, your spots, etc., it's too late to do anything on your tomatoes. What you might want to consider next year is you can mulch the base of the tomatoes, which helps to lessen the chance of splashing spores from soil. But you should also rotate your tomatoes. So if you've been planting them in the same area repeatedly, maybe that's not the case. You sound like a pretty experienced gardener. Then you want to move them somewhere else, or move if you've been growing them in containers. You want to really wash those containers with bleach and water. Clean them up really well before you put them away, and then remove the soil and compost the soil and put in fresh soil next year. Also, be sure to clean any cages, stakes, ties, anything that you reuse with tomatoes, because those spores from those fungal diseases can also reside on those materials as well. So, and the last thing to alert you to is that as you move from plant to plant, if you're wearing gardening gloves, if you're using pruners, if you're using a trowel or any kind of tool, you may be carrying those fungal spores from plant to plant as well. So just be really conscientious of sanitation when you're working with tomatoes. And you can also try some new tomatoes that maybe are resistant to some of these things, these diseases that you've seen too. So think about that when you're choosing your tomatoes next year.
All right. Before we get back to texts, let's grab another phone call. Sharon calling in from North Branch this morning. Hi, Sharon. What is your question, please?
Good morning. I have a Weigelia that's only 2 years old and is getting really bushy already. Can I trim it back now, or do I have to wait till later fall?
You want to trim those back after they bloom. So I believe they're a summer blooming shrub, if I remember correctly. And so when they're finished blooming, then you can go ahead and trim them. You can also wait and trim them in the winter as well, too. But yeah, you want to enjoy any kind of flowering that they have, and then prune them after that.
All right, very good. Is this a good weekend to trim back iris and divide hostas? Texter wants to know.
It is a good week to do your iris, also your peonies too. If you've got a lot of peonies that are crammed together, this is a good time to divide them and to move them. Now, with peonies and with iris, be sure that you're planting them at the right depth. So iris rhizomes, they look kind of like ginger, which is also a rhizome. You want to plant those so that those are slightly showing. Those rhizomes show at the top of the soil. So plant them about half deep. And then you can also trim those back. Now remember, any of the green leafy growth that you trim back, you're removing some of the potential for photosynthetic activity. In other words, what the plant does to create energy for next year. So unless they're dead, I wouldn't trim off the leaves. Unless they're brown or yellow, or maybe they've, you know, failed, you could trim those off, but keep any of the nice green leaves. Just let those be. And yeah, this is a good time to do the iris. Also peonies. Peonies are really fussy about the depth they get planted, so plant them at the same depth. And it may take a few years before those transplanted peonies bloom again. So just be aware of that. But it's a good time, especially if you've had a lot of powdery mildew issues or other leaf diseases, is to spread those peonies out.
Okay. Listener wants to know, when should we stop fertilizing our lawns? Good question.
Oh, that's a good question. I wish John was on. I think
this is really the time of year, isn't it? Like August, September.
Yeah.
To do that.
Yep, you could go ahead and fertilize now. Again, they're actively growing. Yes, Denny, you're correct. You can answer this question. But so lawns are actively growing, and when plants are actively growing, that's a good time to fertilize them. In this case, the lawn. And so you could go ahead and do that now. And John recommends just going with like a fertilizer. Don't go with a weed and feed combination because you may be putting down more product than you really need. And so go ahead and do that now. And then this is also a great time if you're going to do any core aeration to relieve compaction of your lawn and also to seed your lawn. So we have a kind of a nice window in Minnesota of, you know, mid-August to I think around early October where you could seed for next year. You can also wait and seed like you did, Denny, in November. Yeah. When the ground freezes, and you can do dormant seeding in anticipation for a lush lawn next year too.
That's a good thing that what you and John recommended a couple of shows ago about don't use weed and feed, especially if you're going to be seeding, right?
Oh, especially if you're going to be seeding. And our plants, remember that we grow cool season grasses, and we want to fertilize when those plants are actively growing, not in the middle of summer when it's hot and they go dormant. So this is a good time. They're starting to rev back up for the fall growing season.
Julie, before we take a quick break, let's do one more text. Here's a quandary. Texter says, when should I mow a newly seeded lawn? It was planted 4.5 weeks ago, a mix of annual grass, perennial grass, and clover. In some areas, the grass is 4 inches tall, some areas 6 to 8 tall, some areas the blades are already 12 or more inches tall. Can I or should I mow at least part of it? This is about 1/2 acre.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yes.
You might have to weed whip down some of that taller grass. So you might have to take a nice sharp blade. If you have a weed whipper with a nice blade, that would be great. But if you have a string trimmer, you might need to do that first because I don't know if you'll be able to get your lawnmower through there. That's a lush lawn, so nice job.
You could bag it, couldn't you? Only
you could bag it.
Empty the lot.
That'd probably be a good idea, is to bag it if you can.
That's what
otherwise, you should rake it up because it's going to lay on your new grass and probably shade it out too much. So,
good point.
Yeah, it's going to be a phase type of project, I think. So, it's been a great year.
Good point.
It's going to be a phase type of project, I think. So, it's been a great year for growing grass.
Well, I should say. All right, hang on, Julie. We'll take this break, a bit of a break here. Be right back with the remainder of the show. Here is our phone number. It also happens to be the text number, 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830 WCCO. Had a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming any kind of a lawn or garden question you might have for Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. And we have, of course, Julie, more than we'll get to this Saturday morning. Let's grab a phone call. I think Janine is on the horn calling in from Mapleton this morning. Janine, good morning. What's your question, please?
Good morning. I am a home gardener, and I plant potatoes every year. And for the past 5 to 10 years, I get what I'm assuming is a blight in the potato patch. And about 30 days after the potatoes emerge from the soil, the leaves get a tinge of purple to them, and then they curl up, and eventually the whole plant dies. So the size of the potato never advances to beyond like a new potato size. I have tried different varieties of potatoes. I rotate every year. I'm wondering if, one, if it really is a blight, and two, if there's an additive that I can add to the soil that will help get rid of whatever is going on.
Wow. That is a good question. I'm just looking, actually, we have a great page called Vegetables A to Z, and it lists a whole bunch of different vegetables. And here, I'm just looking at the potatoes page now under diseases. And I will totally be transparent, and I am not a potato expert. But there are a number of different diseases. There's early blight, late blight, which you mentioned. Those are fungal diseases, and they cause leaf spot diseases and lesions on the potato tubers. So I don't know about the discolorization that you're talking about with the purple color and then the plant completely failure. But they do mention that soil-borne diseases of the potato can cause an entire crop failure. And once those spores are in the garden, it's difficult to get rid of. So it could be that, where do you get your seed potatoes? Janine, are you still on the line there?
Yep, I'm still here. And I do buy them from local nurseries. So they're coming from reputable sources.
Okay.
And the potatoes themselves do not have blemishes on them. It's just that the plant dies, therefore it stunts the size of the tuber.
It sounds to me, and you're rotating them, which is great, but I'm wondering if that that those leaves are causing, you know, that there's a fungal disease, like a early or late blight. And I don't know if there's something that you can spray, or that maybe the seed potatoes need to be, let's see, boy, this is a headbanger for me. I think that it sounds to me like it's soil borne, and that there may be, you may have to change your growing location more than just rotating them in a, I don't know if you rotate them in a single bed or if they're from bed to bed, but you may be, if you're a home gardener, maybe you want to try growing them in a container or in a straw bale garden, or just something completely different that that you can still get better potatoes than you're getting now. So it's clearly, to me, it sounds like it's a fungal disease that's killing the upper part of the plant, and that's a soil-borne disease of the potato. So yeah, I think that I think I'd try like something completely different, and maybe growing them in containers with fresh soil.
All right,
that's a great question.
we've got 2-3 minutes to go on the show, Julie. Let's see how many folks we can help out here. Here's another text. Texter says, "I planted 5 Carl Forrester feather grass. The leaves are full and healthy, but I got no feather seed heads. What's wrong, do you think?"
I'm going to say sunlight. That maybe they are planted somewhat in the shade, and these are full sun plants, and you're going to get the best flowering from these plants. That's actually what they are, the flowers. You're going to get that in full sun. So I'm thinking that maybe it's time to move those plants. They may also be older plants. Not sure how old they are, but you can look in the center of a Carl Forrester feather reed grass, and you start to see a bare center. That indicates that the older part of the plant has died off. And you just have the newer growth, which is the outer part of the plant. It looks kind of like a donut almost. You can dig those plants up and then just divide them and then replant them in a sunnier location. So I'm thinking it has to do with sun.
Okay. This listener says, "My Meyer lemon tree started to bloom and then the flowers fell off before the lemon formed."
Mm. That I've had that happen too with my Meyer lemon trees, which are a continuing saga. But it's just that they didn't get pollinated. So if they don't get pollinated, they don't form fruit, and the flowers dry up and fall off. So it's just that there's not enough bees around to do the pollination, and they are self-fertile, so they don't really need the bees. But that will enhance the possibility of fruit. Could also be, too, that there's too many flowers. They sometimes put out a ton of flowers, and the plant just can't support that many, and particularly that much fruit. So that could be another case, too, where there's just too many flowers. Maybe it's like the heat that we talked about earlier with vegetables, that heat has caused them to kind of dry up and drop off as well. So it could be a number of different things.
Okay. Texter says this, "When do I stop harvesting rhubarb?"
Oh, that should have stopped around the 4th of July. So we want to give our rhubarb a hefty couple of months to produce. And so you should have stopped around that time. That's kind of a rule of thumb. It can vary a little bit either way, but if you really got to bake that rhubarb pie, you might sneak out there and grab some of the stalks. But yeah, you should leave it alone. around mid-July or so, and let it just continue to grow and fertilize it. It's a big feeder, and that'll give it a lot of energy for next year.
Ooh, rhubarb pie.
Rhubarb.
Say, we have to take our leave here, Julie, just to give a quick reminder in the last 30 seconds or so to get to the Arboretum and to get to the university website.
That's right, extension.umn.edu. And if you did not get your question answered, we have Ask a Master Gardener, where you can go ahead and send photos and ask your questions to our amazing, amazing Extension volunteers.
And if you're going to want to have a chance in beautiful weather tomorrow to hear the abiders at the Arboretum,
yeah.
When and where exactly will you be on the grounds?
We are going to be on the Newton Terrace. It is the terrace that is outside of the restaurant. So super convenient, great seating, shaded, easy to get to. And you can go inside and get yourself something to eat or something to drink, use the restrooms, go to the gift shop. But come on
excellent.
Out here. It's a lot
and of fun. Have a lot of fun, too. It's a great,
yeah.
It's just a lot of fun. Well, break a leg. And Julie, I hope to see you tomorrow. Otherwise, let's meet in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'll see you at the State Fair.
Good deal. That's right. Absolutely. Thanks, Julie Weisenhardt from the U of M. Now, got those home improvement questions ready for Andy Lindis. That's coming along next hour. 59 degrees right now from News Talk 830. This is WCCO.